Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Skeptically Speaking, the show that asks you to call in and question everything. I'm here with on-air producer Sean Wiemat, who is again training production coordinator Mike Harrison on the sound for us.
How's it going?
I think we've all noticed that science and technology fields are full of the Y chromosome and not so much of the double X. And since we assume a pretty significant overlap between the science and tech community and the skeptical community, we also see that same lack of females. But we also know that there are more women involved in science and tech and in skepticism every year. So what exactly are the barriers to women becoming involved in the skeptical movement? What about the women who are actively participating? What attracted them and what made them stay? And how exactly do we go about increasing our numbers? Well, we have a few skeptical women on the line and in the studio, and we have some opinions. So we're going to do a bit of a roundtable today about gender and the skeptical community. And there will be no speaking up segment today, as I actually want the entire hour to talk about this topic. We have a lot of ground to cover. So, Josh, thanks for letting me bump you. With us on the line, hopefully she's on the line, is Dana Blumrosen in Santa Cruz, California. She's a psychotherapist. Are you there, Dana? Dana? Apparently she's not. Also, we have Marion Kilgore, mechanical engineer.
Hi.
And Jill Powell, artist and member of Skeptic, the Skeptical Woman's Blog.
Hello.
So thanks all for being here. I'm sure Dana will be here soon. So last month, all of us attended the amazing meeting, which was the world's largest skeptical gathering in Las Vegas, which ruled.
Agreed.
Yes.
And while we were there, some of us started talking about being a woman in the skeptical community. And as it turns out, we had a lot to say. And so, of course, I wanted to do a show about it. So let's start with some amazing meeting demographics. Is Jeff on the line?
This is Jeff.
So Jeff Wagg is on the line with us, communications and outreach manager of the James Randi Educational Foundation. And thanks so much for being on Skeptically Speaking, Jeff.
Oh, well, thanks very much for having me.
So I understand that this was the first year that TAM has actually tracked gender demographics.
Well, we only tracked it loosely. We've never actually considered this to be that big of an issue because we want to have the best speakers possible. We don't want to actually have, you know, a spot where we have, oh, we need three more women, so let's only consider women or anything like that. So we just try to go after the best speakers. However, this year we noticed that we didn't have very many women speakers, and we're not very happy with that. So we actually went through and looked, and we looked at the demographics of the audience. And to the best of our counting, we had about 30% women in the audience,
okay.
Which is pretty good. I've been to a lot of these conferences from other groups, and I've never seen anyone approach that.
Wonderful.
And from now on, we're going to try to keep track of that data. A lot of people get upset about having to fill out these things like what's your gender, what's your race, what's your religious belief, all that stuff. I don't know how much we're going to get into it. But the male-female ratio should be a little bit simpler.
Okay, so completely anecdotally then, how would you say this year compares to previous years?
It has increased every year. In fact, there's two demographics that have increased. Let me just say it this way. Our audience is getting younger and more female every year.
Well, that's lovely. Well, on that note, let's talk presenters. How many women presented this year?
Depending on how you look at it, we had four women speaking. We only had one on the normal main program, and that was Jennifer Willett, who was wonderful. And then we had Allison Smith, who ran a workshop, and we had Harriet Hall, who was on some panels.
And originally there was one more woman scheduled, correct? And she had to back out?
Yeah, Emily Rosa, who as a child invented the experiment to disprove therapeutic touch. She had to back out because we couldn't arrange the logistics of her coming.
Okay. So the total number of presenters would actually be 17%. So how does that compare to previous years, do you think?
This year, that was low. Last year, it was about the same. In past years, it's been a lot more. In fact, We had Nadine Strossen, who's the head of the ACLU in the United States, as our featured speaker 1 year. And I know we've had as many as 5 women speakers at once.
Okay, great. So it seems like female attendees are increasing, but the presenters are, according to the numbers that that you sent me before the show, they're staying about the same, anywhere from 17 to 23%.
Yeah, for the last 2 years. And this year was a little different. We had different people organizing the conference. We had different different people getting the people speaking. And a lot of the women we've had in years past have been there more than 1 year. And this year we tried to get some new folks. So the other problem is that not everybody we invite comes. We invited a lot more women than accepted. In fact, our acceptance rate of women versus men was very low. So I don't know why. I don't know what that means, but it's an interesting thing, is that it seems like women may be less likely to speak at TAM.
And actually, we're going to be talking about that a little bit later as well. I'm just wondering, do you know what percentage, and I didn't ask you this before, but what percentage of JREF members are women?
It's a little, this is an interesting number. I don't actually have that number, but it is not as favorable towards an equal male-female ratio as TAM is, and that is because our membership tends to be much older. At this point, we're talking about paid membership now. These are people who pay to become a member of the
right.
JREF, and those people tend to be older because older people have more money, and older men are much more common in our organization and others than are older women. Now, if you look at forum membership, which is free, anyone can sign up and join the forum, it's much more equal.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's good information. Thanks very much for being on the show, Jeff.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate it, and you and the James Randi Educational Foundation as a whole, actually. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, and I'd just like to say that today is James Randi's 81st birthday, so happy birthday, Mr. Randi.
Absolutely. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Randi.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, it's been said that with the increase in female attendees, gender isn't actually an issue in this community. It's self-correcting, so we don't need to worry about it. And I'm not sure that that's actually true, so
no.
To say the least. And hello, Dana, who came on late.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No problem. So let's talk about our local skeptical communities for a second. Marion, can you actually speak for the Edmonton Skeptics, since Jill and you and myself are all a part of it?
Yeah, sure. For the Edmonton Skeptics group, actual people signed up on our Facebook group. I did the count just earlier today. It's 22% women on our Facebook group. I would say that actual people coming out to the events is a bit higher. It's probably closer to 30, or depending on the event. Our on-topic night last month was probably quite close to half women.
Which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Dana, what's going on in Santa Cruz?
Well, you know, I am new to the skeptical movement, and TAM 7 was my first event. So I finally just discovered that there was a Santa Cruz Skeptics group, and I haven't been to a meeting yet, but I have joined them on meetup.com, and it looks like our stats. We have about 26 members, and about 42 to 45% of those folks seem to be women.
And that's wonderful. That's promising.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about female presenters. While the numbers at TAM in terms of presenters seem to be sort of stagnant, even with the increase in female attendees, how does that compare to our local presentations and lectures? Jill?
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it could happen, but I only know of one female presenter that has been at any of our Skeptical on Topic nights. In the last year, which kind of makes me a little sad.
When
just one
it.
In the city of Edmonton or the province of Alberta could come out, really?
But keep in mind, we have a very small sample size with our on-topic
exactly.
Night.
It's true.
Point. It's true.
But on the other hand, if anyone remembers another female that we're not aware of, do call in.
Yeah.
So, well, do you think the number of do you think it's an issue, the number of presenters, then?
Yeah, I think going ahead, we're definitely going to have to work on making sure that we get a balance. Because if we... Well, actually, let's face it. Most of the people we have going and organizing our on-topic nights between the three groups that are collaborating on them are guys, just because they're the ones that volunteered. So we may have to put some effort into making sure they talk to women, too, as presenters.
Don't be afraid.
Cooties. Well, you know, I actually tweeted about this topic. For anyone who's on Twitter, you may follow me. I was actually looking for opinions on gender in the skeptical community, and someone responded with, how about the bigger question, race and skepticism? And he followed with, the gender numbers are closing in with the USA skeptics percentage-wise among whites, but the movement fails with race. So is race a bigger question than gender? What do you think, Dana?
I have to disagree a little bit with some of Jeff's assertions that that this shouldn't be as important of an issue at TAM, because I think this is absolutely an issue. I think, once again, this is an awkward movement to enter into if you don't see your peers represented. You know, I know how naked I felt at TAM just not knowing whether or if there were out LGBT folks represented there. So I can only imagine just looking around what that would be like, the intimidation factor for someone who's a person of color, considering that the numbers were so low.
Definitely. Audience, if you'd like to talk about gender and your own skeptical group, or you have an opinion on women and the wider skeptical community, do call in to 780-492-2577, extension 1. You can also email live at skepticallyspeaking.com, or if you're on Twitter, at Skeptical Radio. And we'll be back in one moment.
Skeptically Speaking wants you to question everything. To be part of the discussion, call in every Friday from 6 to 7 Mountain Time at 780-492-2577, extension 1. That's 780-492-2577, extension 1. You can also email your questions and comments before or during the show to live@skepticallyspeaking.com, or if you're on Twitter, at Skeptical Radio. After the show, continue the conversation on our website at skepticallyspeaking.com. Or check out our Facebook group. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and while you're there, why not add a review of the show? Skeptically Speaking also airs on Citywide LP 99.1 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, Public Reality Radio, WPRR 1680 AM in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Rosslyn 101.1 in Rosslyn, British Columbia, and on freethoughtradio.com. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Skeptically Speaking. I'm your host, Desiree Schell. Today we're talking about gender and the skeptical community with Jill, Marion, and Dana, all female members of the skeptical community. So what we're talking about today is, how exactly is this community succeeding in attracting women, and where do we need work? Another question is, can women be sexy and smart? Or does the sexy bit cancel out the smart bit, if only in people's minds? And does even talking about these issues publicly negatively affect optimism and excitement within the movement? So actually, that last point is something that came across my Twitter feed. Someone tweeted, a catch-22 for improvement-minded skeptical activists. Discussing the problems of skepticism diminishes optimism, excitement, and support. What do you guys think? Is that actually a danger, Jill?
I don't think we should be quiet about this. Nothing will change if we pretend nothing's wrong or if we sit demurely in the corner. I don't understand how talking about the lack of female involvement in skepticism diminishes optimism, excitement, and support. Shouldn't it be a rallying point? Shouldn't we be excited for that?
Well, I also think that if you get women and they look at the skeptical community and go, oh, it's all men, and nobody says anything about it, they're just going to assume that it'll stay that way and may not join in.
Exactly.
You know what's worse yet? I do have to point out the sheer number of off-the-record conversations that that have occurred since I actually posted this show. It's kind of ridiculous. There's a lot of people with a lot to say and a severe aversion to saying it publicly. Has anyone else had the same experience? Dana?
I definitely have. I'm currently engaged with a number of women about this issue, and I was looking on ICBS Everywhere, which is Barbara Drescher's blog, and I actually found a quote that was responding to this exact issue from a woman who was saying something to the effect of, in response to the sexism, wow, And here I was actually thinking about going to a TAM one of these days. I think if we don't speak out, we're scaring more women away through inaction. We need to get the message out that the conference facilitators know about and care about this issue and are actively working to address it. So I was, you know, I was a little disappointed to hear that that Jeff wasn't considering this a more of a concern.
Well, and see, that is a concern. I guess some of us are concerned that if we don't start actually paying attention to this and opening a dialogue about this, that it is going to decrease eventually the amount of women come, or at least limit the amount of women that are going to come. But do you think less women are actually going to come because they hear about some of these issues? I don't know. Does that make sense to anybody?
I can't say that it would bother me, but... I can see how somebody, if a woman was thinking, oh, I don't have any friends, I'll just go on my own, and then they heard, oh, but there's not many women there, it could affect whether or not they decide to come.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I do want to point out, actually, that the race issue is definitely a huge issue, but we can only do one topic per show. So I think the four of us here agree that gender is an issue. I promise I will do a race and gender issue. I mean, sorry, a race and skepticism issue at one point. But I also, quite honestly, don't want a bunch of white people sitting around in a booth talking about race. I don't
Bravo.
Think that works.
I completely agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, oh, sorry.
Just mention that I was that woman who showed up on her own and didn't know anybody there. And I do have to say that I work in a pretty sort of segregated community where women have a lot of authority. All my managers in public health are women. So it was kind of a culture shock to go into an environment where some of these awarenesses weren't a given. And so I feel like in some ways I am the example of that woman and her experience going to the first TAM and seeing how this was handled.
So how did that work out for you?
Well, it was a bit shocking. I was honestly, while I met some amazing people, I think it was a sort of a feminist awakening for me because I became intensely aware of gender differences and of sort of the role of women in the skeptical movement and some of the objectification of women in comments and as sort of a point of some of the speakers' jokes or of group joining in, group connecting on being able to more effectively hit on women. So that was really a shock for me, and it was a turnoff.
And I've got to say that I come from pretty much the exact opposite. I'm an engineer. I work in an engineering company where the ratio of women is very low. And to me, this was actually a little bit refreshing.
See, and that's interesting. Okay, and we're going to talk about some of the issues that Dana mentioned further on in the show. One of the things that people keep mentioning is that there are less women in science and tech fields total, and since the skeptical community really draws heavily from those communities, it would make sense that that would be a reason why we have less women attend TAM. But how much overlap do we really have with science and tech, just looking at our own local communities?
Quite a bit, although it's hard to say, because we haven't actually sat down and done a survey of the Edmonton skeptics, like, where are you all from? It seems to be from all over the place, although personally, I would love to see more people from the arts, because we do have a lot of, if not science-related jobs, then people who are really interested in science. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be some more balance there with more of the arts.
I agree.
As the artist in the room. Okay, so I'm wondering, because it seems to me that there's actually quite a diversity of there are people who are working in science field, but it is quite heavily computing science. But there's quite a few people who are not involved in science. So I'm just thinking it doesn't really necessarily follow that we have less women in our groups because there are less science and tech women total, because our group specifically is actually doing pretty well recruiting from the non-science fields. I don't have a science background.
Neither do I.
Jill doesn't. There's not that many women to talk about, really, but I'm just saying.
Us too, we count.
All right. So, What else could be a barrier to women actually getting involved? One of the things was the confrontational nature of skepticism and how it's something that women avoid.
Well, I personally don't think so. I mean, Des, let's be serious. You're a delicate flower. So,
I am.
So you hate confrontation.
I'm a petal, really.
But besides you, obviously, I personally don't see confrontational or the confrontational nature being a deterrent to being involved in skepticism. I mean, of course, there are some women who don't like confrontation, just as some men don't. But it's not something I see, at least locally, to make women pause and say, you know, I think I'm going to go over here instead. And I hate to say it, but it kind of sounds like something a guy would say to his girlfriend. Oh, sweetie, I'd love for you to come to my skeptics group, but, you know, it's kind of confrontational. So, and in my opinion, it's not a bad kind of confrontation. There's definitely situations where it could be, but for the most part, it's engaging in conversations, debates, talking with other people, and I don't think women are afraid of those two things. I just think it's the old societal norm that women shouldn't engage in those things, and that boggles my mind, because are we still debating about that?
Well, I think part of it, too, is the skeptical community has a reputation as confrontational, like very confrontational,
yes.
More than it is.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I think we have an email.
Yes, we do. I'll just read it out here. Women have a reputation of being more emotional and less logical than men. Given that most forms of woo emphasize feelings instead of reason and evidence, could this be at least in part responsible for the lack of women in organized skepticism?
Emailer, please send me those studies that says women are more emotional. And are we talking environmentally, or are we talking, like, genetically?
Or does it just mean that women are more willing to express their emotions? Which could be true. I'd be willing to accept that.
Yes. Yes. I think we need a little more information on that, because that sounds like a bit of a generalization to me.
I think so.
To be perfectly honest, I know just as many men who are involved in questionable, you know, in naturopathic medicine and that sort of thing, as I do women. So
really,
yeah. I mean, I guess it's more targeted towards women, but that doesn't mean men aren't oblivious to it. Of course, they get affected too. But I think it's kind of a generalization to say that, oh, because women like to talk about their feelings. Well, logic. What's that?
Very depressing. Okay, let's move on to sort of a very controversial issue, actually. How about the perception of women in skepticism? This is a fairly loaded question. So now I know that Dana and I were actually following along with a particularly intense discussion of some of the clothing choices at TAM. And that would seem like an odd topic, but it ended up on a bunch of different skeptical blogs. You know, Skype, I love you, but you are a cruel mistress.
Why you gotta be that way, Skype?
So, well, what do you guys think about that? Just the perception of women in skepticism. What do you think? Are there some false dichotomies here, or do you think... And that's how
they
loaded
all,
this question is.
They all point to the engineer. Well... It kind of hurts me when they start talking about clothing choices, because when was the last time you heard that about the guys?
Exactly.
To be perfectly honest. And, you know, then the question of, is TAM a social event, or is TAM like a networking conference? Because those would indicate different clothing choices. But even then, either way, you wouldn't hear the guys mentioned as much.
No. Nobody says, oh my God, look at the sea of khaki in the room.
There was a lot of khaki, actually.
There was. But I mean, at the same time, why is clothing a focal point? That shouldn't be what we're thinking about.
But as I said, there was this quite an ongoing and very linked discussion on a lot of the skeptical blogs. And they were... quite a bit talking about the hypersexualization of women at the gatherings. So, I don't know. And one of the things that you were talking about is that there was... there's a different perspective of... Like, I haven't seen any men sexualize themselves, first of all.
No.
Which is an interesting point. And we actually do have someone on the line. Hi, go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Joshua.
Hello, Josh.
I'm a feminist, a skeptic, and a male, roughly in that order. And just first of all, want to shout out how great it is to hear this conversation. But wondering, as a quote-unquote male skeptic, what should I do and what should I stop doing? to support and encourage women in skepticism.
Keep talking. Really. That's what I would keep telling people. Keep... I know, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of pressure on men to not say these things. But it's nice to know that some men are actually taking this concern seriously.
Well, and the other thing is, it's even, not even to women, but to other men when things come up in conversation. And it's just, if whenever they say something that is sexist or inappropriate, it's calling them on it. And that's worked well with, and in the engineering fields and in other fields as well, is just mentioning it when it happens.
Now, we actually have we've had our photographer come into the studio who looks desperate to speak about this topic. This is Mark Julian.
Yes, if I may, I just think it's more of a problem that the men aren't talking about clothes, because, and I think you've seen the other skeptics, I think they would do well to actually talk about, you know, what they're wearing and what's fashionable and what isn't. That's all I needed to say.
Thank you, Julian. It's a tad off topic, but that's no, understandable.
Well, so, you know, it's saying equality should go the other way.
Exactly.
Okay, there's a lot of sighing. Okay, so there's, you know, I do want to touch on the fact that the oft-repeated point that at the amazing meeting there's 3 women to every 7 men. And so those of the feminine persuasion get a heck of a lot of attention. And some women revel in that. And quite honestly, they have every right to.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, my impression of this is, on the one hand, it's nice to get attention, you know, flattery strokes the ego and all that. But on the other hand, when I'm at TAM or Skeptics in the Pub or whatever I'm going to at the moment, to hit on people or to be hit on is not the goal. I'm here to meet people who I share common interests or who I don't even share common interests with on topics within the skeptical community, to make contacts, to schmooze, to have fun. Getting attention from someone because of what's in between my legs instead of what's in between my ears is not really that flattering, and it's actually kind of insulting. So I'm not saying flirting or being playful or whatever is wrong or bad, but it shouldn't be the first thing that comes to mind. It shouldn't be the first thing you think of when you see a group of women at a skeptical meeting.
Well, that really leads to the age-old question of whether you can actually present yourself as an attractive woman or as an intelligent woman. And, of course, we know it's possible to be both. But we're talking about perceptions here. So when someone's engaged in really outwardly sexualized behaviors, as we did see at TAM...
Yes, we did.
It's understandable that, well, I you know what, I'm going to make that a question. Is it understandable that people are going to identify that aspect of somebody's personality as their primary characteristic? And I'm not suggesting that that's appropriate, but is that understandable? Or is that just buying into old stereotypes? I love the heavy sighs.
They're such hard questions, that's the thing. And it's also context dependent. But I would say if you're at the skeptic, you know, if you're at anything and what you're putting forward is a very sexualized image, not even image, behaviors is what it is, because you can dress really sexy and still come across as very professional, but it's the behaviors, and behaviors are how people judge you.
And I honestly oscillate between two opinions on this, and it really depends on the day, potentially the minute.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Like, on one hand, again, I haven't noticed any males openly sexualizing themselves, but I could have missed it.
There were a lot of people, yeah. We
exactly.
Missed it.
I didn't see everybody. But on the other hand, and, you know, what is equality about, and dare I say, what is feminism about? If it's not about giving women the opportunity to express themselves however they're comfortable. But if I had a third hand...
I have too many hands.
On it would be the fact that I don't want to be considered a skeptical cheerleader, and it makes me very uncomfortable that some other women are viewed as skeptical cheerleaders. So, and I guess that leads to another big question. Does sexualizing ourselves hurt the community in the long run? Or does it open it up to different roles of self-expression, roles and or self-expression?
I guess it would probably go both ways. I think that definitely people, you know, have every right and opportunity to dress and act how they feel comfortable in any given setting. But, I mean, there are women who aren't like that and probably don't feel comfortable in those situations. So is that a deterrent to the skeptical community? If that's the reputation or the behavior that women have that people are hearing, are they going to not bother being involved if they're like, well, it's a bunch of skeptical cheerleaders. I'm more serious than that. I'm not going to be involved.
Exactly. So if you have an opinion on whether being a sexy skeptic is just good fun and self-expression, or if it reinforces a negative stereotype, or whether this whole thing is giant moot point, do call in to 780-492-2577, extension 1, or email live at skepticallyspeaking.com. And I'm very sorry about all the technical issues on this show. So how do you think this perception of women and skepticism affects other female attendees or potential female attendees, specifically the shy women?
Well, as the resident shy person of the group, I'd have to say I did think about this question for a really long time. And I've come to the conclusion that personally, I don't really care what people wear or how they act because it doesn't affect me. But I have to say, when I first started getting involved in skepticism, I was a little weary and confused and kind of, I guess, skeptical about that, because I was under the assumption that, you know, being part of the skeptical community, your main focus is on people's intelligence. And seeing that people, you know, dress a certain way or act a certain way, especially women, because like you said, men, we never hear about men in tube tops or whatever, so...
Thongs. Thongs. And please, anyone who's listening, don't ever let me see you in a thong.
Or a tube
Anybody.
Top.
Anybody.
I guess if you aren't as much of an extrovert to be comfortable around that stuff, I can see that being an issue if you're going to actively be involved. Being online in the skeptical community is one thing because you have your computer in front of you. You don't have to deal with that whole... I mean, of course, there's some sexualization on the internet. It's the internet. There's porn everywhere. But in person, it's a lot more daunting, I guess, to be faced with that, like face-to-face. So it might be easier to do it online than to be in person?
Well, see, that's another thing. I wonder if part of this isn't just the fact that we're all getting together in one place with people who have a lot of common interests for possibly, especially people who live in smaller communities. This is the first time that they've been out and about with a whole bunch of other skeptics, and maybe sometimes they just get quite excited and maybe their behaviors change, right?
That's very true.
And it is Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And it is Las Vegas.
You get to be crazy in Las Vegas.
There's that. And again, we don't want this to become a divisive issue with women. You know, like, we're a small enough segment that we really can't afford to be divided. So I know this was on the blogs a bunch. And everyone can definitely have their own opinions on it. And I can say I'm definitely very uncomfortable with the hypersexualized nature of a lot of these events.
As am I.
But I don't want to encourage any women blaming. This is something as a community that we have to work through. And I just really want to keep a dialogue open about this.
Well, and I think the important thing is to get a diverse group of women in there. And then new members can find whatever agrees with them somewhere in that community.
Exactly.
Well, doesn't that sound nice?
That sounds wonderful. Let's go ride our unicorns now.
Aww.
So we're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back.
Next time on Skeptically Speaking, we'll be playing Ask a Pharmacist with Scott Gavura. There are so many questions to ask. Should naturopaths be allowed to prescribe medicine? How does he feel about pharmacists who refuse to dispense medications that conflict with their religious beliefs? Are there situations when a pharmacist can say no to filling a prescription? And what's the deal with vitamins? Well, the answers to these and any other questions you might have on the next episode of Skeptically Speaking, every Friday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time, here on CJSR.
So welcome back to Skeptically Speaking. I'm your host, Desiree Schell, and we are talking about gender and skepticism. Audience, you are more than welcome to join in here. The number is 780-492-2577, extension 1. You can email live at skepticallyspeaking.com or Twitter at Skeptical Radio. So going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, and actually just now, we actually don't want to make it seem like the majority of skeptical women spend their time doing shots out of each other's cleavage. Okay? I really want to get that across.
That's not the billboard here, people.
And nor are there roving bands of skeptical but still vaguely Neanderthal males encouraging women to take it all off.
No, definitely
no,
not.
Those? No? No? Okay. So, although this needs to be a discussion, this is not TAM bashing. This is not skeptical community bashing. But again, the dialogue needs to be open about this. So, I'd also like to point out that in nerdy communities, I'm a member of many nerdy communities, we have a lot of this. And yeah, again, needs to be talked about. So, why are we successful? What are we successful at in the skeptical community as women? How are we successful at attracting women? Like, we're here, so it hasn't failed.
No, definitely not.
And Tam was fun.
Tam was awesome.
Tam was a lot of fun.
So, and it's obviously on the right track. But I keep hearing, actually, that Dragon Con is this bastion of female-friendly wonderfulness. And, my Google foo failed. I couldn't find a single post on anybody's blog talking about this, but I've heard this anecdotally tons of times. So we crunched some numbers today, and the presenter numbers are actually interesting. The Skeptic Track, which is the skeptic-centric conference track at DragonCon, has 18 women out of 43 presenters, and that's 42% of their speakers.
Well, that's
wow.
Nice. That's I nice. Can't say that in before... 2 months ago, I had ever heard of Dragon Con, but that's nice to hear.
Yay!
It's one of the bigger conventions in the summer, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm oblivious. I hadn't heard of TAM until February.
This community moves fast.
I have also heard really excellent things about Dragon Con, and actually some of the online conversations I've had with women who have not attended or have chosen not to attend TAM Dragon Con seems to have a very different reputation.
It does. And, you know, one of the things that I also want to mention is they're also offering childcare.
Ooh, that's wow.
That is one of the things that the skeptical community could be better at, is family-friendly events.
Well, exactly, because a lot of women skeptics are mothers, right?
Like, definitely.
Hello, Des. Yeah,
hello.
But I think another good way to get women involved would be kind of directing things to their interests, like mothers and their everyday activities. Of course, mothers, I think, can be skeptical, especially when it comes to their children, because they want the best for their child. So maybe that's something we could explore with mothers, is aiming things that interest them and their...
Wandering a little bit from Des's talking points. One of the things, I know with engineering, one of the things with women is retention. They were saying that TAM is getting younger and more female. So the question is, if a lot of those women are young women, if, you know, they go away for a couple of years, they're busy with their kids and getting a family put together and that sort of thing, are they going to come back? And I think that's important to talk about as well.
Very true.
I like that. I hadn't thought about that. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about solutions, but first of all... you know, a few of us have brought this up, and some of us of different genders within the skeptical community don't think this is an issue, don't think the presenter's issue is an issue at all, think this is a dead issue, in fact. And so one of the ways that we can find solutions is to involve men. We need allies in this, and a lot of men are actually quite concerned. I know, because I've received emails from you guys this week, which I appreciate. But a few of us have brought up these issues to some of the prominent male skeptics, and we've had, shall we say, mixed results.
Oh,
Dana,
dear.
you had a specific experience with this.
Yes, I did. I mean, I'm a psychotherapist by practice, and so oftentimes my solution for conflict is discussion and being direct and assertive about things. And so I, after going to TAM, I decided to email one of the presenters who I thought could have done a better job, especially on this issue. So I'm going to just take a minute and read my exchange with him, if that's okay with everybody.
Absolutely.
Great. I'm going to call him John because I'm just going to call him John. So what I wrote was, "Hi, John. First, it was a pleasure to attend my first TAM and to have the opportunity to watch and learn from so many of my skeptical, critical thinking heroes in person. Your talk on the cosmonauts was no exception. It was well-researched and was both an educational and entertaining way to watch critical thinking in action. My background is in the humanities, and so I am arriving late at the objective argumentation skills party. I'm also writing to give you feedback about one comment that you made during your TAM presentation. It was small, but it generated a big laugh from the audience. You commented that you swapped out the original photo of Valentina Vladimirovna Tereshkova with another one because, and I'm paraphrasing here, quote, her real photo was so hard to look at. As a woman, part of what made up this year's 30% female TAM minority, I want you to know that the comment was hurtful and suggested disrespectful disregard for the equal humanity and intellect of women scientists and cosmonauts. All too often at this TAM, women were referred to first by their looks and sex appeal and only secondarily by their achievements. As the first woman in space and as a human being in general, Valentina deserves better. And so did the young women watching you in the audience. Finally, because so many of the guys who attend TAM are looking towards you and other speakers for role modeling, please know how important your example is. So what do I suggest? I encourage you to publicly acknowledge that your comment was disrespectful to Valentina and to women. I also encourage you to promote and champion respectful references to and representations of women and TAM presentations in the future. I'm entirely open to a dialogue on this issue if that would be helpful. Please know that I have tremendous respect for your work and that that is why I'm contacting you. Sincerely, Dana." The response I got was a one-word response that said, "Hi, Dana. Feedback always appreciated. Thanks." So I wrote back to that briefly. I wrote, "Hi, John. While I appreciate you writing me a reply to my email, it was frustrating to offer to dialogue with you about this and to feel summarily dismissed. Frankly, it felt a bit like another example of the problem. And in struggling how to work with situations like sexism, intentional or otherwise, in skeptical communities, I have begun to reach out to folks interested in this discussion. And so I also wanted you to know that I will be sharing my exchange with you with some fellow skeptics who are similarly engaged with this issue. Sincerely, Dana."
And we're those fellow skeptics.
Yes.
Hi, John.
The second reply was probably the toughest part, and I'll conclude with this, which is he wrote, meant as positively and politely as possible, "I am not in kindergarten and do not require a, quote, dialogue or any other kind of lecture. The issue has already been beaten to death, as I'm sure you're well aware. A dismissal would have been a delete and not a polite thanks for your opinion."
Well, John. We're going to beat the issue some more.
Oh, are we ever.
So
I would say that it hasn't been beaten to death because I'm new to the skeptical community and I haven't heard about it.
Exactly.
So, you know, and what I do want to get across is I'm wondering about the best way to talk to the vast majority of guys because this is not representative of the men in the skeptical community, in my opinion. I myself stepped away from a skeptical group because the spokesperson is also the spokesperson for a men's rights organization that that feels that immigrant women's health centers are examples of reverse racism. So don't even get me started about how hideous that is. But again, that is not representative of the community. There are a few of these kind of guys, but to tell you the truth, I don't think these are the people who we should be talking to. How do we talk to those great guys who just maybe don't notice that this is a problem?
Well, I think part of it is back what I said earlier, is when you're in a group and somebody says something and it's inappropriate, it's calling it out right then and there. Because then there will be some guys who hadn't thought about it, who had just it just had never occurred to them that this is inappropriate, and that's a good place to start.
Well, guys, you know, if you have anything to say about this, we're listening. We want to make it clear. We want to help you help us. And this affects you, too. So please do call in if you have any ideas at 780-492-2577, extension 1, or email live at skepticallyspeaking.com. So let's go to being solution-oriented. We're already on that track. We obviously need to recruit more female presenters for skeptical events, and we actually have an email.
Yep, this is from Kat McLeod. It says, I think that women's sexuality shouldn't be an issue when it comes to their beliefs. Why can't a woman be smart, sexy, and skeptical? I think that instead of questioning what is appropriate for skeptical women to wear to events, shouldn't we be questioning why people can't take a sexy woman seriously? Great show, everyone. Thank you.
So what do you guys think about that?
More sign.
I think we should be able to take women seriously, even if they are sexy, but a lot of the times, the sexiness is the only thing that is focused upon, not the woman and her intelligence. It's what she's wearing. And, I mean, I would love, because like you said earlier, Des, we all know that you can be smart and sexy. You can't. It doesn't have to be two different things. You can be one and the same.
Wonderful. It feels like this ends up being just a distraction from the issue. Like, I want to see guys standing up and clapping or making noise when some of these comments happen at these events. That's the kind of support I want. You know, I'm so glad there are guys who are supportive of women getting to dress however we want to dress. That's important. But I want to hear guys talk about being allies in feminism and civil rights equality at these conferences.
And I think that's really the point here, is how do we get men to be allies? Because, you know what, I can talk until I'm blue in the face.
It's true.
But I need thank you. I need someone to help. Going back to the presenters issue, I actually, I find it interesting, and I'm just wondering if the skeptical organizers of these conferences are running into the same thing. Jeff mentioned earlier that not as many women say yes, and I definitely have the same experience on this show. Men usually say yes to being a guest, and I get the impression that the majority of men just kind of assume that they'll be great, which is great. That helps me. But women have, honestly, like just a myriad of excuses to decline. I've heard, I don't speak in sound bites. I've heard, I don't want to represent my entire profession. I've heard, I'm really, really busy. And that's totally understandable. And not that I don't think they're lies, but I get the impression that when booking female presenters that they just, they feel a lot more pressure than men do.
Yeah, well, I think that's fair. When there's less of you, it's easier for people to look at you or your gender and just assume that you're representative because there's fewer examples.
So what do we do about that? Do we hold all female panels? Because I've heard from organizers at other conferences that that's not necessarily a good thing because it creates that separation again.
Right.
I agree. I don't think anyone should be going out specifically looking around saying, we need four more women to fill out this panel. We should be talking about it more and just hoping that it happens, or doing sort of unofficial out-of-TAM events like we did with the Canadian meetup.
And that's something that that actually Dana and I were talking about earlier. Dana, are you still there?
I am still
okay.
Here.
Perfect. I worry about the tech issues this show, obviously.
And I think what you're talking about is how important... I think I'm actually going to be the voice that says, I do think we should be looking for those four extra women presenters. Only, of course, they're going to be the four amazing women presenters because they're out there. It's a question of making that commitment to find them, and I know we're all in agreement about that, but I really do think that representation is that important, and I also agree, along with the question that's on the table right now, that it's important for groups of us who are like-minded to meet in an environment where feminism and sexism, the question of that, are not a debate. We need to have some kind of like a secret sign to throw at each other so we know, hey, we're here. You know, and it's cool, and you're safe, and you're not alone.
And that's one of the reasons that you created the Women for More Women at TAM8 Facebook group.
That's correct. I came home all fired up and wanted to create some change, and so I went on Facebook and created Women for More Women at TAM8, and we have 43 women from all over the world who are involved. Unfortunately, and I certainly want to issue a welcome call to people to please participate and have discussions about this, it largely ended up being a three-way discussion between Barbara Drescher and Kylie Sturgis and myself, which was very wonderful. But I think a lot of people struggle to talk about this topic.
And this goes, again, to being off the record. You know, I know there's a lot of people listening right now. And if you've noticed, we haven't had one phone call. And that I find interesting. And what, one email, two emails? This is a really, really touchy issue for people. There's women who feel bashed on both sides. There's men who feel that they're being told that they're horrible people. We really need to get to a point where this is going to be acceptable to talk about.
And that people aren't immediately on the defense when you bring it up.
Exactly. But we also, in addition to that, need a place where we don't have to explain ourselves. The people who already know there's an issue, we need something for that. So maybe holding, I'm going to use the F word, maybe holding a feminist skeptic dinner at the next TAM. Would anybody attend that?
I would. I'm not sure where we'd fit it in, but we could try.
We fit in a Canadian meetup this year.
I know, but can we do both?
How about getting more involved on an organizational level? Is the key getting more women involved in the organization of TAM or of Dragon Con or these local skeptical conferences?
I don't even know. I don't have any experiences with prominently female organized groups, so I don't know if it would have an effect or not.
You know, maybe the idea is, I don't know, if we compare ourselves to other social movements, there's always been moderates and militants. And one of the things that I've found interesting is that in most movements, there's been the militant faction, which pushes the moderate faction to create social change. And most of, you know, the organizers or the government or whatever the, you know, the case may be, are very much... people enjoy talking to moderates more than they like talking to militants. So if you have the militants to push the moderates, sometimes it works. So do we need, you know, I don't know, a feminist league, feminist skeptical league, again with gang sign? And I think we have a phone call here.
Hi, hello? This is Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Yeah, I want to ask you about if I could get a little more elaboration on what was said about actually mandating more women presenters or stuff like that. But I think you just lost the person who said it.
Mandating more female presenters at TAM.
I would love that. But I don't know. You know, that's another thing. If we mandate more female presenters, how does that affect the community? Do people feel like they're being forced?
I generally am against affirmative action because I think it just masks problems. But it's kind of just said in passing the show.
Scott? I would love to talk to you more about this, but we are out of time for today. I wish you would have called in sooner. Thank you for a mail calling in. And this show obviously raised way more questions than it answered. So thanks very much to Jill, Dana, and Marion for being here. And thanks. I would say thanks to y'all for calling in, but, you know, one. Thanks, Scott. Thank you, Scott, for calling
thanks,
in.
Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
And if anyone wants to actually continue this discussion on the blog, that would be wonderful. You can go to skepticallyspeaking.com, and also you can download the episode. We'll have it up by Sunday at noon. You can also find us on iTunes. We'll see you next week on Skeptically Speaking.
This is Desiree Schell, host of Skeptically Speaking. The following email from Phil Plate was sent to us while we were live on air. Phil Plate is president of the James Randi Educational Foundation, which is the group responsible for organizing the amazing meeting. Due to technical issues on this week's show, the email was not read live, but I'd like to include it in the podcast version of this episode. I'll read it verbatim. Hi, listening to the show now. I missed the first part of Jeff Wagg speaking, unfortunately, so forgive me if I cover things already said. We had initially approached something like 6 or 7 women to speak at TAM 7, out of perhaps twice that many slots available, and many simply couldn't make it for various reasons. In the end, two accepted, and one, Jennifer Ouellette, was able to make it. When I first came to the JREF, women speakers was a specific topic I was concerned with. I was surprised to hear from the JREF staff that there was a large attrition rate between women invited and those who could actually come, but it turns out to have been true. I don't see why this should be gender-based. It may very well be low number statistics. Many men invited cannot come too, of course. I'm still scratching my head over it. All I think we can do is continue to invite as many women speakers as is warranted, and hope more accept in the future. We haven't seriously started looking at speakers yet, but there are several women I'd like to have come. As far as race diversity, yes, that would be wonderful. The skeptic movement at large does seem to be made up of people who look a lot like me. White, beards, etc., etc. We have already had some excellent suggestions for more diversity in speakers next year as well. So basically, this is absolutely something I'm personally aware of and concerned over, and we at the JREF are always looking for ways to improve the situation. Phil. Thanks very much for writing, Phil. And thanks to all of you for listening. Talk to you next week.
South America does not exist. The moon is painted on the sky. Things sometimes fall up, but you never see. And everything you believe is a lie.
Dinosaurs were invented by God as a test. Our bodies don't rot when we die. Oh, the hippies are working for the government, and everything you believe is a lie.
Everything you believe is a lie.